Our subject today will be, and part of next week also, by the way. My material is more than 1 week, but less than two, so I'm going to share next week with the gathering committee. Yeah. What's that? No, I'm not going to do that. I'm going to do my half, then you can do your half. Huh? Oh, Leo will be here? Okay. Well, somebody will. We'll cover that. So our class today involves the Christ-like spirit duties and responsibilities of the recording brother. For some reason, I was chosen to do this class. In the most general sense, the primary purpose of the recorder, or the secretary of the ecclesia, is summed up as being a conduit through which certain information is received and communicated to and from the brothers and sisters in the ecclesia. That is the most basic description of the position, and the details of which many might not be very familiar. The details involve very much more. So it'll be our task this morning to consider together the duties of the recorder and to the way that those duties are worked out both in daily and in weekly responsibilities. Much of what we will be considering has to do with the outline of the duties that are found in our Constitution and in the Ecclesial Guide. But I'd like to start out this morning by thinking about ecclesial correspondence in a scriptural way, to look at a few examples from the Word that I hope will illustrate the sense of responsibility that goes along with this position. However, it should be understood by everyone that it is not my intention to try to draw any comparison between the nature of the correspondence that is recorded in Scripture and the normal, everyday correspondence that is the duty of the present-day recorder. Certainly that would elevate the position above its intended purpose. I'm not implying that the communications that we in the modern era typically make as recorder are comparable to the nature of what we're going to look at in Scripture. But there are underlying principles. There's basically two references that I want to look at in Scripture, and they do have bearing upon the modern ecclesial secretary, or the duties of the modern ecclesial secretary. Because sometimes, and that's the thing, 90% of the recorder's responsibilities are very basic. Simple communications, things like study weekends or health issues, things of that nature. But there will be times when his responsibilities include matters that are of a much weightier, nature, where the position, of the ecclesia needs to be conveyed properly. In other words, there are times when the ecclesia needs to make correspondence to other ecclesias or throughout the whole brotherhood on matters of doctrine, and it does fall to the recorder as part of his responsibility to convey the position and the questions that the ecclesia might have regarding that particular issue. So, again, most of it is fairly standard, basic, but there are times when there is a much greater weight of responsibility put upon the recorder's shoulders. So, in consideration of a scriptural example of ecclesial correspondence, let's look at Acts chapter 15. I don't have it on the board, so you'll have to actually look this one up. Acts chapter 15 and verses 22 and 23. Then pleased the apostles and elders with the whole ecclesia to send chosen men of their own company to Antioch with Paul and Barnabas, namely Judas, surnamed Barsabbas, and Silas, chief men among the brethren. And they wrote letters by them after this manner. The apostles and elders and brethren send greeting unto the brethren which are of the Gentiles in Antioch, in Syria, and Cilicia. And that's all we're actually going to look at from Acts chapter 15. So here we see the brethren, the elders in Jerusalem, sending an official correspondence via Judas and Silas to the ecclesias that are in the Antioch region. Now, we might wonder whether or not these men were considered to be adequate messengers. Because if they were going to those ecclesias, why was it necessary for the brethren in Jerusalem to write letters to send with these men? They could just simply verbalize it. Well, obviously, the reason for the letters has nothing to do with the ability of these men to convey the message properly. The matter that was in consideration was very serious in nature. It was a problem that had become widespread in the Gentile ecclesias in the first century. And it was something that was very volatile in the ecclesias. So it had to be handled very particularly. And that's what these letters were intended to do. They were intended to convey the authority of the Jerusalem brethren beyond question. And plus, they could be shared with other ecclesias, any number of ecclesias in that area, other ecclesias that were involved in the problem. So the letters would then be read in one ecclesia and sent to the next, and they were read around so that the full understanding of the position of the Jerusalem brethren concerning this matter would be understood by all the ecclesias that were involved, and not just the one. So they were worded specifically to address the matter without inciting any further problems. Now, obviously, the position and the intention of the brethren at Jerusalem would have been supported by the verbal communications of Judas and Silas in order to give the sense which sometimes written word fails to convey. I think we're all familiar with that. Sometimes we'll write somebody a letter or in this day and age more specifically an email, and it gets taken completely wrong, not in the way that we intended it at all. So I think that these men were sent just to help convey the spirit of the message. You had the letter with the black and white words. This is the intent of the brethren at Jerusalem. And then Judas and Silas were there to help explain so that the ecclesias could understand the spirit in which those directions were given. And then again, the letters were intended to represent the decisions and the intention of the elders in all of the other ecclesias. And the problem that they were dealing with, and at this point in time, of course, we're very familiar with, was the Judaizers and their requirements upon the Gentile ecclesias to maintain the rituals of the Mosaic law along with the law of Christ. So the letters that these brethren sent served the needs of the Jerusalem brethren in conveying their position and their authority to brethren who were in areas that were just, it was just too far for them to go. Okay. And also, I think that we have a benefit that the words which were written down and sent sometimes are conveyed or are preserved in our Bibles. So we have the benefit too. You think about the letters being sent to distant ecclesias. Well, how much distance could they send it than to us here in the 21st century? We have the opportunity to understand these things, and not just simply to read the words, but to understand the meaning and the intent behind it. Where were these elders coming from? What determined their position? What was the scriptural basis for their decisions? We have the benefit of reading that as well. So the letters that were written stand as a record that can be referred to in later times of the position of the ecclesia. And that, I think, is part of, that's where the modern day ecclesial secretary or recording brother enters into it, because there will be times when the recorder of the ecclesia will need to express, just like the brethren in Jerusalem, they needed to express the position or the intention of the ecclesia in doctrinal or official matters. And it may be an audience that is far separated from us in distance. We can write something that will be read in ecclesias specifically in one area, or even the whole brotherhood all around the world. And then also that also stands as a record of the ecclesia's position at that time. So I think that's the idea there, is to convey some of the responsibility that belongs to the recorder in reference to representing his ecclesia and conveying the position and the intentions of the ecclesia properly. The next reference is actually very short. It's just one verse, Revelation chapter 2, and I just picked the first one, verse 1, something that we're familiar with. Unto the angel of the ecclesia of Ephesus write. Now, that could really be taken as an overstatement of the office of the recorder to imply that the angel of the revelation is the secretary. That's, fortunately, it's not the secretary. It's not the recorder that's being spoken to here. It is the arranging board. It is the elders of the ecclesia at Ephesus and all the other ecclesias through chapters 2 and 3 that are being spoken to. So not just the recorder. It's basically the elders and fulfilling their responsibilities in each of the ecclesias and the difficulties that those ecclesias were experiencing. So the chapters 2 and 3 of the Apocalypse convey to us Christ's advice, counsel, warning to those ecclesias, which was directed specifically to the elders, and it was their responsibility then to convey that to the ecclesia and to act accordingly in directing the ecclesia to be in accordance with Christ's directions. So that's who the angel is. It's not the recorder that we might think. It is the elders of the arranging brethren. And we look at this one, this particular verse, for the idea that in the ecclesial guide, Brother Roberts makes a comment, and I think that this reference underscores that. He says, it is necessary to have a brother to whom all communications intended for the ecclesia may be addressed, and who shall present the same to the arranging brethren as representing the ecclesia. So that he's speaking of a relationship that must exist between the recorder and the arranging brethren in the context of some of the ecclesial correspondence, certainly not all. So this relationship is of primary importance, the relationship between the recorder and the arranging brethren, or the elders of the ecclesia. This is of primary importance in fulfilling his duties or executing his duties. He must conduct his business within the sphere of the influence of the arranging brethren. And this is further clarified by Brother Roberts when he says, he, that is the secretary, is in all things subject to the arranging brethren, without whose direction he has no power to act. So this relationship, I believe, is expressed in that phrase taken from Revelation 2. The angel of each individual ecclesia that is addressed in the Apocalypse is identified in Revelation 1 as the seven stars in the hand of Christ. And this is what Brother Thomas has to say in Eureka about those seven stars. He says, the mystery or meaning then of the seven lightstands is that they represent the sevenfold ecclesia. And the seven stars is that they are symbolic of the elderships, anointed with the Spirit and shining with gifts. And Brother Thomas also says, it was to this angel that the writing was addressed. The word was appropriately used for the presbytery of the apostolic ecclesia, as already shown in the place referred to above. It does not indicate one man. So when we read to the angel and each one of those letters, it's not, Brother Thomas' point is he's not speaking, Christ through the Spirit is not speaking to one man. He's speaking to the presbytery of the ecclesia, of course, which we understand to be the eldership. It's another one of those words. In the last class we talked about, bishops and how that word has changed over the years. Well, presbytery is another word that certainly carries a certain idea. But what Brother Thomas is trying to tell us is that in his explanation in Eureka of the Apocalypse is that these directions, instructions, warnings were not directed to a single person, but rather to the eldership. And that underlines then the need of that for that special relationship that has to exist between the secretary and the elders of the ecclesia. So in the apocalypses, the shepherds who are being addressed by Christ in the letters, because it was their responsibility to effect the necessary changes that are outlined in those letters, so that the ecclesias would not be lost. And this, I think, is the meaning of the emphasis that Brother Roberts puts in the ecclesial guide about the relationship of the secretary and the arranging brethren. The ABs are communicated to and communicate by the recorder, and he needs to be dutiful and faithful in keeping the arranging brethren informed of matters that are going to affect the ecclesia. Matters which may come from any place in the world, as well as conveying the communications to the ecclesia of the decisions and the actions of the arranging brethren. The ABs are shepherds of the flock, leaders by example, meaning that through conduct of their spiritual wisdom and experience, they are to lead. The concern of the arranging brethren should be focused on the spiritual welfare of the members and not simply the day-to-day business. Those daily common things of interest that may come to the ecclesia, may come to the attention of the ecclesia from time to time. So when weightier matters arise, the recorder must perform his duty soberly and precisely, and he must do so without personal bias. His job is not to color the information in any way, but rather report it for consideration of the elders. Now, at times there will be matters of less spiritual impact that do not necessarily fall within the sphere of deliberation by the elders, such as announcement of study days, communication of health issues, notice concerning magazine subscriptions, those types of things. And so the recorder serves a secondary function to the ecclesia in these matters. But again, we're talking about the relationship between the recorder and the ABs. So that being the intention of Brother Roberts and what he wrote in the Ecclesial Guide concerning the secretary, that he is to work hand in hand, so to speak, with the ABs. It's also expressed in the fact that in many ecclesias, such as our own, the recorder is, by virtue of his office, an AB. And this is not intended, I don't believe this is intended to elevate the position of the secretary in any way, but rather to facilitate communication between the ABs and the secretary, as well as to instill the same degree of experience and spiritual understanding in the office of the secretary as is required by those who are elected to be ABs. So a simple way to think of that is that an AB should be the recorder and not the recorder an AB. And it's just a matter of perspective. And all what I'm saying there is that the same qualities and character that is expected of an AB should be expected also of the recorder and of the treasurer, because they serve within that capacity. So in order to be a recorder, the brother should be qualified as an AB, the same qualifications. Okay, so at this point, I'd like for us to spend some time considering what our Constitution says concerning the duties of the secretary, as well as some additional points that Brother Roberts makes in the Ecclesial Guide. Now, speaking from experience, I know sometimes people don't have their Constitution with them, so I put them up on the screen for everybody. How's that, huh? Is that being dutiful or what? Okay. I don't know about you guys, but I'm very hot. I'm very warm up here. Must be all the hot air that's going around up here. Okay. The first entry in the Constitution, our Constitution, is concerning the secretary, is number 20. That the secretary shall give a summary of the past year's arranging brethren's meetings at the annual business meeting. It's the first thing in the list. And it might not seem to be one of the recorder's primary duties, because it's something that he only does once a year. But nonetheless, this is a fairly important responsibility of the recorder, because this arrangement answers to the spirit of Brother Robert's words in section 20 of the Ecclesial Guide, which talks about ecclesial control. The arrangement answers the spirit of Brother Robert's words in section 20 of the Ecclesial Guide, entitled Ecclesial Control, regarding the necessity of positional appointments made by the ABs requiring the approval of the ecclesia. In section 20, that's what he's talking about. Under ecclesial control, he makes a comment that the records of the ABs, or the decisions of the ABs in reference to appointments that are made outside of the normal election process, needs to be approved of by the ecclesia. Also in section 24 of the guide, Brother Roberts argues for transparency in the arranging board decisions and actions. In other words, there should not be any secrets. AB meetings are not secret meetings. The decisions that they make, the reasons for those decisions, the deliberations that they have should be transparent. And in that section, Brother Roberts' point is more of disclosure to maintain that proper spirit between brethren, where there is no feeling of something is going on that I don't know about, decisions are being made that I have no part in. Okay? That's really what his point is there. Not necessarily that the ecclesia should approve everything that the ABs do and say and decide. That's not his point in section 24. When he's talking about transparency, he's talking about the fact that the meetings should be open and the minutes should be available, so that there is no feeling of, well, I didn't know anything about that. Okay, the ecclesia should have opportunity to review those decisions and actions made by the AB. So the ABs, along with the recorder and the treasurer, are servants of the ecclesia. We discussed that previously, and it is for the ecclesia to decide how they are to be best served. By making a summary of the minutes, which is what number 20 there on the screen is talking about, by making a summary of the minutes of the AB meetings available to all, the ecclesia, in being aware of the decisions and the actions of the ABs, can find a way to support those decisions. The ecclesia can determine if there are any objections to the things that are recorded in those minutes, the decisions that are made by the ABs, as well as to determine if the individuals of the arranging board are functioning according to the intention of electing them into office. Now, we have to be careful there, because that is not intended to mean that arranging brethren should be elected in order to promote my personal agenda. Okay, that isn't what I mean when I said that. But it should become apparent through time Once a brother is serving in that capacity, whether or not our expectations of what that position involves is being met by that particular individual. In other words, is he or unsuited for the position, or is he suited for the position? So, again, that's a matter of transparency. It's a matter of the ecclesia understanding and not necessarily rubber stamping or approving each or deliberating and debating each and every decision, but being aware of what's going on. Now, prudence needs to be exercised in the matter of reporting AB decisions and activities. This is a requirement of our Constitution for the Secretary, but we need to be prudent. In 1897, Christadelphia Magazine, Brother Roberts wrote about the practical relationship of the ABs to the functioning of the Ecclesia in general. So he's talking about the relationship between the ABs as a body and the Ecclesia as a body, and what that relationship, how it should work, because he sees the ABs functioning on one level and he sees the Ecclesia functioning in another level. And I'm going to read it pretty soon, but what he's talking about is that the whole Ecclesia need not be involved in all the business that the ABs are involved in, and that didn't come out right either. I'm struggling today. Okay, the ABs should be concerning themselves with matters that the Ecclesia should be free of. Maybe that conveys it a little bit better. That there's certain aspects of business that have to be handled by the Ecclesia that the whole body doesn't need to be bogged down by. Maybe I'd be better off just reading it in what Brother Robert says. The idea he puts forward is that the arranging board as a concept in the 1800s was intended to free up the Ecclesia from business and certain inter-ecclesial affairs in order that the Ecclesia might focus on spiritual concerns and activities, such as edification of the members and preaching. I think that probably says it better than I did. And so he addressed the reporting of the AB minutes to the Ecclesia in this way. This is what he says about number 20 of our Constitution. He says, "We now depute approved brethren to attend to business matters, but a little of the old trouble is left in submitting their decisions to a second overhaul every 3 months." So what he's saying is that there is a concern should the Ecclesia need to deliberate and debate and redecide all of the matters that the ABs have already considered. When he says old trouble there, he's referring to an earlier statement in that article where he says, "At first we started," and that was in 1864, "at first we started with having the whole Ecclesia in the management. But as we grew in numbers, this was found to be inconsistent with our ecclesial welfare." He goes on, "By the alteration proposed some time ago, the Ecclesia would be kept periodically informed of all that was done, but would not have it in their power to debate or alter them except at special meetings. At the same time, it would not lose," it, that being the Ecclesia, "would not lose the power of exercising control where necessity might arise. In case of serious objection to anything done by the arranging brethren, it would be in the power of a tenth part of the body to convene a meeting to alter it. And if a tenth part did not object, then the meeting ought not to be held. Then the Ecclesia would always have in it their power to change the arranging brethren at a new election." And he goes on to say, "Our present system was disapproved of by Dr. Thomas, who thought that we ought to aim at a nearer conformity to the apostolic system of perpetual elders with authority. He was afraid the constant appeal for the Ecclesia's sanction by vote would open the door for turbulent spirits and put in their power to interfere with ecclesial peace." So the point is that the reporting of the minutes of the AB meetings is not to open these items up to re-deliberation and debate and a vote on every single matter. It is for the purpose of transparency, so the Ecclesia knows what is going on at the AB meetings. And of course, our meetings are open. That's another one of our requirements in the Constitution. So the spirit of Brother Roberts' words is certainly appropriate. But as time has gone on for over 100 years since Brother Roberts, the atmosphere in modern ecclesias has become even more democratic than what Brother Roberts was uncomfortable with in his day. He wrote in the Christadelphian, speaking of the ecclesias in the 1800s, "Our present system is too democratic. It is more democratic than the most democratic system of this democratic age." I think it's helpful for us to keep the original intention of appointments and procedures in mind while we are fulfilling our present responsibilities. For although times change, the truth does not change. We are very vocal about safeguarding the purity of the truth and safeguarding the brotherhood against the ever-changing influence of the world around us. And I think within the scope of our ecclesial responsibilities, it's helpful to keep in mind that the intentions of the brethren who were involved in establishing these responsibilities as outlined in the ecclesial guide, which we take for granted, we expect that that's just how ecclesias run, and then we tweak it and we modify it a little bit to fit our own ecclesia through the Constitution. But it's helpful to keep in mind where these brethren were coming from and what their intention was, their spiritual intention, because I think sometimes we can get a little bit caught up in, for lack of better words, the politics of it. And that's not what it's about. The intentions of Brother Thomas and Brother Roberts and the elders in those ecclesias was to keep a spiritual perspective while we are performing the necessary business within the ecclesia. That was the overall view. Okay, we have to do this business. How do we keep it spiritual? And their emphasis was on the spiritual aspect of it and not necessarily on the responsibility, the duty itself. And I think sometimes we can kind of maybe lose sight of that. So I think it's helpful to read the comments that were made when Brother Roberts was writing the ecclesial guide and when he's bringing out these ideas. Because we look at the guide and we can see within his words scripture. And those are the kind of things I think we obviously need to keep in mind. So we are striving to maintain the purity of the truth. We are striving to safeguard the ecclesia from the changes that are happening out there in the world. And the point here is that Brother Roberts looked at his world and said, you know, it's very democratic, and democracy is not necessarily a good thing. And he's saying our ecclesia is more democratic than the most democratic nation out there. And that's something that we need to keep in mind. And I think that fits into the idea of reporting the actions of the elders, those who we have elected into this position for this function. Do we understand the purpose of that function? Do we agree with the level of responsibility that we have given to the elders? If that's the case, then every line item does not need to be debated and voted on. That's basically what Brother Roberts is saying. But of course, if there is something that is significantly troubling, and it's troubling to a number of people, Brother Roberts mentions a tenth of the ecclesia, then there should be some way to change that. And that would be Brother Roberts' counsel us through a special meeting. The ecclesia would call a meeting, and the matter would be considered. The reasons for the decisions made by the ABs would be explained. The whole matter would be considered, and the ecclesia would either say, okay, we agree with that, or no, we want this to change. But again, those are on those items that are of significant import and are objected to by a number of people within the ecclesia, a number of brothers and sisters. So the point that Brother Roberts is making is that there are certain matters that can best be examined and deliberated and handled by a smaller group of brethren than having the attention of the whole ecclesia constantly diverted from its duties of tending to the spiritual growth and the welfare of those within the body and the promotion of the gospel to those who are without. That is how Brother Roberts defined the business of the ecclesia. Very spiritual. 100%. Tending to the spiritual needs of the ecclesia, preaching the gospel. Then when it comes to the business aspect of it, well, that's why we have elected the ABs. And how does that fit within the context of the recorder? Well, it's more than just reporting the minutes of the meetings once a year. It also has to do with the relationship that should exist between the recorder and the ABs, and the recorder's responsibility of conveying to the ecclesia the intents and the decisions of the ABs, and vice versa, bringing to the ABs problems that may be occurring in the ecclesia or things that are coming from outside. Okay, so it would be counterproductive for the ecclesia then to have to re-examine and re-deliberate every decision that's made by the ABs. That's reserved for matters of serious matters of objection. Okay, what are we doing for time? Yep. All right. Number 21. That the secretary prepare a rotating schedule of appointments for memorial service. Now, some of this might seem, well, of course, we're familiar with that. But I think it's helpful to go through these things. And there are things that happen behind the scenes that you may not be aware of in regards to each and every one of these responsibilities. So this responsibility of the recorder provides the ecclesia with a predetermined schedule for the duties that are associated with a memorial service. A timely preparation, and distribution of the schedule will assist those who are to serve, whether they are the presider, the reader, the exhorter, the doorkeeper, the custodian, so that they might be prepared for their duties, well aware of when they are expected to serve. The preparation of this schedule can involve a fair amount of juggling in order to keep adequate spacing of the duties as well as equal distribution between the brethren that are serving. In other words, you don't want somebody to serve twice in a row in the same capacity. Now, you might serve 2, 3, 4 times in a weeks in a row, but hopefully it's in a different capacity. So you need to make sure as the recorder that the duties are spaced properly and that they are distributed properly throughout the year. You know, it's not right for me to exhort once a year and everybody else has to do 10 times a year. So, as recorder, I have to be careful about that. All right. Priority is given to, in the making this list, the priority is given to the exhorter. It's important to keep that list pretty rigid because that responsibility requires generally the most amount of preparation. So once the exhorter list is determined, then the other lists, presider, reader, doorkeeper, are arranged around it. Again, to make sure no one is scheduled for more than one duty on a day, on any given Sunday, and also that there's a proper amount of spacing between each time that the person is required to serve. The recorder may also need to reorganize and redistribute the schedule if necessary. For instance, if a server needs to suspend his service or if he desires to resign from that duty, and that has happened. And it should be noted that the schedule, contrary to what I might say, is not written in stone. Sometimes there are substitutions. I think we had one today. So there's a lot of trading Sundays that goes on, and that can become a challenge for the recorder if he doesn't write it down right away. It makes the announcements a little bit interesting. You get raised eyebrows. I'm exhorting this week. What? Okay. And I think it's probably a pretty common practice in all ecclesias. So we have the schedule prepared so that we have some idea when we are expected to serve. But again, those things get changed around. Related to the duty of preparing the schedule, and this is a timely responsibility, the recorder also has the duty of orchestrating the annual election. The stipulations that are related to the nomination and election process are outlined in pretty good detail in our Constitution, so there's not a lot of wiggle room there. The duties include attending to details such as the timing for issuing the nomination and the election ballots, counting those ballots, and posting the names of the nominated brothers and sisters at the hall. Also, the recorder is the one who, if someone is nominated, he will call you up and say, "You've been nominated for this position. Would you like to accept it?" And then again, he also needs to create the serving list for the year. So once the election ballots are done, we generally will have, in addition to the serving schedule, we'll have a list of the serving brothers and sisters for each of the duties, even outside of memorial service, such as visiting brother and sister, or organist, assistant organist, hospitality sister, preaching committee, all of those things. Those will be listed, and that's his responsibility to put that list together. So that's all we have time for today.